cliffcentral.com.
Hey, you with the Futurology Show right here on Cliff Central. Brett Lindsay, the digital philosopher in the studio at the moment. BS and Michael Cowan are busy fart-assing around somewhere in the beach, doing whatever they are doing at the moment. But I hope you're listening, guys, so you can take a rest, but you still got to listen. Today, we are talking about South by Southwest, and I have none other than Mr. Gareth Cliff in studio with me.
Thank you. I felt like I hadn't done enough for 3 hours already this morning, so yeah, I'm here for a fourth, but it's with you, so it's different.
Oh,
it's
thanks, cool. Man. Cheers.
Yeah.
South by Southwest.
Yes.
What an amazing trip.
It was fascinating. I was there for about 7 of the 14 days. And you know, they divide South by Southwest into 3 different pieces.
Yes.
So that there's music, there's film, and there's interactive.
Interactive.
Interactive is a sort of misleading title. I don't think they knew what to call it because it's part tech, part media.
But there's so much happening. How do you box it all?
Part sort of geek celebrities.
Yeah.
By geek celebrities, I mean you got you've got these people who are making YouTube videos.
It's like the Comic-Con of geek.
Yeah, you got these billionaires like Chris Sacker. You got people who are sort of political. I mean, Obama was there last year.
Yes, I saw.
And that was
But you were there last year, so you saw him?
I was there last year as well. We didn't go to the hall that he was in. It was full, but they had satellite sort of feeds.
Because in my mind, you're having tea with him just before the keynote and seeing him afterwards.
No, but it's this very interesting... It's a rarefied place because you end up being in environments with very, very nerdy developers.
Yeah.
Who are working on the most complicated APIs and software, and they're trying to build things that we'll only start using in 5 years' time.
Yeah, it's very future focused.
Right. You've got some Japanese engineers, electrical engineers. You've got American venture capitalists who are striding around in suits trying to look really, really rich because they have lots of money, but it's not theirs, and they want to find something to put that money into that also isn't theirs so that they can make the people whose money it is
the real, richer. The real bullshit upgrade, but done in such a nice, classy way.
And then you've got international people. I mean, it's so eclectic because you've got people from Norway and people from China and people from Kenya and lots of South Africans. Well, when I say lots more this year than last year.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Well, it is, but they have a trade show.
Yeah.
Which is the expo part of it. And they unveil all kinds of new technological developments and interesting apps and interesting devices and clever things that they're working on. And there are stands for virtually every country in Europe. The Chinese are there, the Japanese are there, the Koreans are there, the Americans are very much there. Countries like Argentina are seen there.
What are they doing? Reinventing the gaucho trade.
No, I can't remember what Argentina are doing, but they had some kind of a traffic solution that they were trying to share with everybody.
The 50 cars they have on the road at the moment are doing...
Yeah, but the irritating thing is there's nothing from South Africa, and we have...
But you were there.
Yes, but we weren't at the trade show.
Okay. Now,
from South Africa, we've got a number of interesting things. We've launched a lot of really, really powerful patents, trademarks, ideas, original inventions. We're an inventive, innovative society. Yeah. And
Elon Musk is no longer represented by us.
Well, he certainly doesn't believe he's South African anymore. If you ask him, he eschews it immediately, which I think he has a right to do.
Yeah.
But quite apart from that, he doesn't need to go and do a trade show for,
not anymore.
His ideas. And I don't think a lot of people even know that the genesis of things like PayPal come from this environment, because the thinking is bred in this environment.
Yes.
You know, Shuttleworth, similar story.
Necessity breeds that, don't you think?
Correct.
It's the bed of innovation.
Correct. And who knows what great inventions are still out there trying to make it through the noise and the clutter. Yeah. But I was disappointed that there wasn't South African presence there. I mean, I think if we spend all the money that we do on educating people in this country, God knows where it goes to, because they come out with shitty matric results. The least they can do is take a portion of that education or the science and technology budget or the small business development budget, which God knows what Lindi Wezulu does with it, and take a billion rand. It sounds like a huge amount of money, but if you put it into a trade show at South by Southwest, I can promise you we'd make back 3.
Yeah. But that's the whole point of it. It's to grow new things to get new things. And that's what's amazing. But
you got people with prototypes there that they're looking for funding, for example. And the one guy has invented glasses that allow you to see with perfect night vision in color.
What?
Yeah.
It seems like voodoo magic.
It's real. And he's worked on it and he's tested it. And you can put them on and try it for yourself. They put you, like those old school cameras, they put a cloth over the back of you and you look into this box and you can see certain objects.
Is that what they call immersive?
Well, this is absolutely. Yeah. But the one immersive experience, which you might like since we're being
anecdotal. You were a bird.
Yeah, it was bird. A bird. Birdly is what it's called.
Okay, brilliant.
So you put on the virtual reality headset and you put on the headphones and you climb into this device that it looks like almost like an airplane. You lie flat with
it. It looks like a proctologist bed.
I've never been on one, but that's nice to know about you, Brett. That's great.
Fantastic. Thank you.
It's more like Jesus on the cross, but the other way around. So you're facing the cross. Okay. And then you have these wings that you can flap and you can turn with your wrists.
It would make an amazing GIF, by the way. We need to do something like
that. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it has a fan that blows into your face.
Oh, wow.
And the fan blows harder if you're going down faster and it goes.
And did you feel bird-like?
Yes, because they've got in the VR headset, they're projecting these images of New York City.
Okay.
They fly right up to the buildings.
Brilliant. Now, one question about VR, and we'll probably touch on it a bit more in the discussion, but where is it going to fit? Because is it the laser disc of the new content? Is it actually this fully immersive, non-linear, interactive space where people can lose themselves in another world? Or should it be more story-focused?
Look, we have 5 senses. So there are only 5 ways we can interpret our environment.
Yes.
There's sight, sound, touch, taste, and
feel.
Hearing.
Oh.
Sight, sound, touch, taste, feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Smell is the one we left out.
So that one's
feel and touch are the same.
That's sort of a quirky one.
So the point is, we've got really close to convincing people. You get fairly rudimentary VR experiences where you're on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And the vision is pretty much convinced.
Yeah. Show scan in your home is
correct.
What it is.
So your eyes, we can tick that box. The sound, that one we probably got right first. Radio was the first virtual reality experience. In terms of being able to plug in headphones or sit with the speaker in your car and you imagine you're in the story.
Yeah.
So virtual reality, I think radio can claim sound. To a lesser extent, television and movies can claim vision. But with VR, it's completely, we've ticked all the boxes
immersive,
inside. Yeah. So you've got to ask yourself what's next. Smell?
Yes.
Touch or taste? And there was a girl who was in a suit. I think touch is going to be the toughest one to figure out.
Yes.
There was a girl in a suit in the Sony exhibition. And the suit is connected to a whole bunch of cables. It's as thick as your arm if you put all the cables together. And they apply pressure in different places. And they cool and they heat. And they do various things to convince your body that you're either in water.
Yes.
Or that you're up high or that you're down low. Or that you have something resisting you, or that you have something that you are pushing against.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I'd say it's about a 20 out of 100 experience in terms of what touch.
It's got some room to iterate, which is great.
Well, and I think they will. That'll develop and develop. Smell, I believe, is a lot easier to do than we think.
Yeah.
Because there's a library that we can store of about 40,000 smells in our memory and that we can experience.
But it's a very fine line between the new car smell and dog shit.
Yes.
So that's the point. Yeah.
And what they can do is they can apparently, I didn't see anything that's approximating this yet, but they can apparently now create the ingredients in a library of about 5,000 different smells to make every other smell.
So you just have this little smell-o-matic machine on the side that just says, well,
it would be a big smell-o-matic
machine. Oh, okay.
Because if you think about
5,000 little tubes.
Let's say someone is wearing a certain kind of perfume and you see her in a Roman market.
Oh, shit.
You now have to have the smell of her particular perfume in
the
library.
Or the drying sausage.
You have the smell of the Roman market.
Yeah.
You might have a bit of dust.
Yeah.
You might have some washing powder on a line that's blowing the smell of the washing towards you. There are lots of different things you got to think about.
In the face of there not being any teleportation development yet.
Mm.
The escapism through these semi-real worlds are going to be the future.
And VR will make us increasingly antisocial. And there are issues around health that need to be considered, yeah. which I don't think a lot of people have thought of before.
So that's sort of where I like it. I mean, as a digital philosopher, it's nice to have digital things and all these enablement tools. But what is it really doing? What is the vast impact of these things?
I think we can foresee a few problems. I don't know if you've spent a lot of time in VR headsets.
Yeah, we've done some stuff.
But you can feel very disoriented afterwards. Yeah. And there's a bit of a problem with acclimatizing back to reality.
Yeah.
And for people who plug in and these things heat up and they're ensconced in it for hours at a time, I think it could probably have massive health implications in the long run. I also think that there is a component of the inner ear balance mechanics that needs to
weeding out.
That needs to be reset
after
an experience like that. And we've got to find ways to do that without harming people.
I still maintain that without proper regulation or at least some sort of caution going into a lot of these immersive environments, we are going to end up like those creatures, those humans in Wall-E. I don't know if you've seen it in 2039, these blobs of disjointed humans. Mm.
And there will be. I think we're going to have to be very vigilant about maintaining the things that make us human as opposed to things that we experience as humans. So VR was an important part of it. In fact, I've divided the three major pillars of South by Southwest this year into VR, AI, and robots.
Perfect. We've spoken about all of those so far on the Futurology Show. So
absolutely. And aside from those, there were one or two curiosities. There's some musical instruments that I've never seen before.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the AI bongo player? Was he there?
No. But they had these guys from Japan.
Yeah.
Had created a guitar that has buttons instead of strings.
Yes.
Very interesting. You can learn to play it in, they say, 3 hours.
Wow.
And
proficiently, I suppose.
And it's a lot more intuitive than guitar. Who would know? I mean, I saw a guy learning on the spot and he could play an approximation of Purple Rain within half an hour.
Wow.
Not bad.
And honestly, telling you, I've never played before.
He'd never played the guitar before. They pulled him randomly out of the crowd, and he wasn't Japanese.
So, that's brilliant. One of the things, though, there's automated, or these over-efficient ways of teaching us new traits and new things, and there's AI automation happening. My query is, where is creativity in this? Because humans are authentically creative beings.
All right. So what they did is they combined the robots and the AI, and they put two robots there and they made them have a conversation. And I was not impressed
with their conversation.
No, their conversation was stunted and boring and dry and predicated upon it's the kind of conversation you would see if one very, very awkward person who just learned to speak English was speaking to another very, very awkward, uncomfortable,
kind of like the Gene Pant kind of conversation.
Socially inadequate person who also just learned to speak English. It was awful and painful and irritating. And the only reason I sat through it was because the professor from Tokyo University, who had decided to embark upon this experiment, looked funny. That's why I stayed. He looked like a funny kind of bizarre-looking guy.
Mr. Origato.
Yeah. Okay. And then they put to Alexa and so Amazon is Alexa, and then there's the Google one, which the name of which
Google.
I forget.
Yeah.
And they made the two of them talk to each other. And that sounded like a human conversation.
A little bit more context.
And they apparently talked to each other for 4 days in a row, without running out of things to say or repeating themselves.
Wow.
And it was a real conversation. So much so.
So are we in danger here? Sorry.
Well, so much so that the one machine had a made-up religion, and it converted the other machine to its religion.
Well, it just shows you it's a lot of nonsense there.
Well, so AI, if anything, teaches us that actually you don't have to listen. You just have to know what you're going to say next if you want to replicate human conversation. Humans don't listen to each other.
They have a script almost.
While you're answering,
yes,
I'm thinking of my next question.
Yes.
While you're questioning, I'm thinking of my answer.
Yes.
But we're not thinking about each other at all.
No.
And what the machines are able to do is cut to the nub of why we're so shitty at communicating and replicate it virtually authentically. So the machines showed me there and then that people do not listen to each other.
Yeah.
To have a good conversation, you should just talk.
Okay. Cheers. And some are better than others. And I think that's, if humans are better than some people at certain things, so machines should have a speciality as well.
I did listen to you, and what you asked about was creativity.
Yes.
Now, the machines will be able to have some approximation to creativity in that they will be able to fill gaps.
Yes.
You can
within parameters.
Correct. You can define the jungle gym.
Yes.
And then let them swing on it. But they still won't, for some foreseeable time, be able to come up with wildly different hypotheses, ideas, colors, imaginings. And I don't think we're in any danger of losing that province for ourselves.
The creative space. Time.
What AI will do is it will ultimately make repetitive, dull,
mundane
administrative
tasks
the work of machines.
Yeah.
And this is great news for people like me and for you, but it's terrible news for a secretary or for a person in a factory. There are lots of people who will ultimately become redundant at the same time as all of this stuff becomes machine work.
Yes.
And it's going to happen sooner than we think. And there are going to be millions of jobs all over the world that will suddenly, and it won't happen overnight, but within the space of a year or two, because
disappear.
It will happen that quickly, they'll disappear. And what I've noticed is that it's like those engines, you know, those jet engines on those very, very fast new age aircraft that they use for military
propulsion stuff. Yeah.
What happens is that the engine, the faster it goes, the more air it sucks in,
yes.
the faster it can combust and compress and
but all the energy goes up behind it.
But the more it's going, the more it goes.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about whether it's Moore's law for processing, or whether it's the ability for machines to take over mundane human tasks, what happens is in the beginning the curve is not so great, and before you know what's going on,
exponential rate of increase. Yeah.
It's rushing 20 times faster than it was 5 seconds.
And that's what I think most people within normal society can't grasp. That's why it's terrifying. It's like a futurist or a digital philosopher. We're like, we can predict that this is where it's going to go, but what does it mean for the people in those factories, in those places, flippers?
I thought of you in one of the presentations. Now, Ray Kurzweil is a name that everybody in futurology know. He's the world's greatest futurist. He was at MIT in the beginning when there was a computer that took up 4 floors, and he figured out Moore's law.
And he enjoyed the Arthur C. Clarke's quotes quite directly.
Correct. Yes. And was one of those people who did, in a very demonstrable way, make predictions that he can now track, and he's got about an 80% success rate. So he's a modern-day Nostradamus.
Brilliant.
Okay. He was there to help his useless average daughter launch her piece of shit book. And she used him. I mean, she's his...
So he wasn't the main keynote?
No.
Oh, wow.
No,
okay.
But she got a slot at South by Southwest
because of him.
Who her daddy is. She's an uninteresting, unexceptional person who's written an unexceptional, uninteresting book full of her unexceptional, uninteresting drawings and her stories about her grandmother. A whole lot of shit nobody cared about. Nobody
Not
cared.
Even her dad, probably.
But the hall was full for Ray. Yeah. Ray Kurzweil. And at the end, we got to ask some questions. And Brett Loebscher, you had on just the other day.
Yep. Last week.
He got to ask a question. We had to send them in via a messaging system. And I sent in... he sent in his question, and it was about his predictability and where he thinks it's going, and the fear of AI, something that Elon Musk is obsessed with too. And the question was something along the lines of, what happens when the machines think faster
when they realize
than we can ever think?
Yeah.
No, not when they realize.
Oh.
Because we don't know that they could ever be sentient.
And they probably wouldn't let us know either.
But sentience implies that there is more than a consciousness and a conscience, that there's also a sense of being, that I know I exist, that I'm not connected to other things, and I'm not just a part of, there are funguses, fungi. The largest organism on Earth is some kind of fungus that lives on the floor of the Amazon, and it is connected to other funguses, and I'm using the incorrect term.
Yeah, but they're not aware that they are.
This one big fungus has no idea that it is one big fungus.
Mm.
But and it doesn't have a purpose, and it doesn't wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night and go, I am X, Y, and Z.
So it's not, I'm hungry, therefore I must. So now, to quote Descartes, I think, therefore I am. At some point, these machines really are thinking because they're thinking for us.
No, they're thinking, but
they're processing probably is better.
He couldn't posit a theory about whether machines will ever be sentient. No. An animal is sentient.
It was so unrelevant then.
But here's the point, is that you've got to realize that the very moment that we reach singularity, where a machine is able to process information.
Yes.
Simple thing. Not think, but process information as fast as we are.
Yep.
The very next moment after that, it is thinking double as fast as we will ever think. And we can never catch up. Our brains, we can evolve over millions of years.
Yeah.
And like we did when we started walking upright, we developed a much bigger frontal cerebral cortex.
Yes.
And we started
because we had to start thinking ahead of ourselves.
Correct. And we started to develop the ability to philosophize and to understand our emotions and to psychoanalyze and to all these higher thought processes.
Yeah.
But there is no guarantee that once the machines get to double on the singularity, we'll ever be able to get close to them again.
No.
In other words, the machines will outthink and outpace us in processing at every given stage and by volumes within time. The more time goes on, the more immaterial our thinking will become.
But now this is the sort of doomsday people out there, they're thinking that eventually the machines, they might not have a sentient knowledge of what's happening, but it doesn't take a lot of ones and zeros to figure out that humans are probably more of the problem than they are of the solution. So less human involvement in certain or most areas.
No, this is where it gets interesting, because what we need to do, according to all these wise people, is we need to become the machines and the machines must become us.
And that's where we're going. Storing data onto one strand of DNA, using the brain,
but
mind.
More especially, the overlap, the interface between biology
And technology.
And that, I think, is where the future trillionaires of the world will come from. The people who first discover, and I remember there was a neuroscientist that was at South by Southwest the year before, and it was a small room, maybe the size of the studio, about 20 people in it there to listen to him. He had found a way to use technology to improve memory.
Brilliant.
So he was working on Parkinson's and Alzheimer's patients.
Okay, yes.
And he had sort of come up with a lattice work, a gauze of conductive material that he could superimpose on the neural cortex, the gray matter of the cerebrum of the brain, and influence thinking and have thinking influence this. Because it's all deep down, it's electric.
Pulses, yeah.
So all of our nerves run on the transfer of one electron from a sodium to a potassium to a sodium to potassium to sodium to potassium, all the way down each of our axons and dendrites within each of the neurons.
And we can turn that into something in reality.
More than that, we can measure it. Yeah. So we know that it's electrical and we know that it's in our nervous system and we know that it results in a motor movement or a sensory.
Which is now the antidote for paralysis, degenerated diseases like autism.
And so we should be able to replace a nerve, if you sever your finger and they stitch it back together.
Stick a USB cable on it now.
The meat is there and the nail grows back and there's hair, but they can't make the nerve reconnect to the nerve. Well,
maybe they can.
Practically, you should be able to because it's just a piece of
wire. Just rewiring the house.
Yeah. So if we can do that, but more especially if we can implant a chip like in these science fiction novels and in the movies where you can learn Japanese by uploading a file, and the next thing you're going, "Ha-chan,
ito-tuma." I know kung fu.
Well, imagine.
Yes, that'd be brilliant.
The moment we can do that,
then
any improvement on the machines is an improvement on us.
Yes.
And we still have what the machines will never have, which is the ability to not follow the program.
Yes.
Yep. The machines don't have that ability.
No. There's parameters and there's flow.
And so the concern is in two areas. That number one, what we do program, we make sure programs ethically.
Yes.
Because the only unethical behavior is going to come from humans.
Yeah. And if we're going to, if Moore's law is something that we're going to follow, then we have to understand the Moore's law of robotics, which is the third one, don't harm humans.
Correct. So if they follow that, and remember Google, and I was at that, I was in Silicon Valley last year at Google, and they talked to us at length about this whole thing about the self-driving cars. There's actually a game you can play online.
Yeah.
Where you have to make moral choices.
Yes.
And they're using this game to gather information about what human, because we don't all have the same morals. They give you a scenario. They say to you, there's a car. The car is traveling down the road. It's a driverless car, but there's a family crossing the road. Do you swerve left and kill the dad or swerve right and kill the kid? Then they give you an example where there's a dog. Then they give you an example where there's, where there's nobody, but you will write off
moral,
the car.
Moral, ethical problems.
And you have to answer in each one what you would do. And you can sit and think about it for hours, but ultimately all that info is going to be put into their big algorithm, and hopefully the car will then make the right decision. I saw just this morning Jack Ma, who's the most successful billionaire in China.
Okay,
he's getting into technology now, Alibaba, all of that stuff.
So he's in e-commerce.
Jack Ma says we're in for a decade of pain when these.
It's great fun when that happens.
When these cars, these driverless cars start to take to the road. A decade, he says, at least.
Well, the thing is, I think the transition phase is going to be the painful bit because we're still going to have us. Yeah, we're still going to have us behind the wheels.
But also the cars.
Yeah.
Because you and I might be able to predict the way a human would behave, but we're unused to predicting the way a car will behave. Consistent as a car's behavior might be once it thinks for itself.
Yes.
We won't know how to deal with that. You know, you swerve sometimes because you can see someone is not paying attention in the car in front of you. But when there's a driverless car, how do you know what to do?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. But there was lots that happened. I mean, we can talk about this for a whole show. And I think South by Southwest, it boasts being one of the most diverse collections of people in any one place from all walks of life. And I mean, you've got people that are photographers and craft brewers and designers and venture capitalists. They're coming from all walks of life.
You know, the whole city is South by
Atlanta.
Southwest. I'm talking about Austin.
Yeah, Austin, okay.
So you got food trucks everywhere,
yes.
All the hipsters. And believe me, you get some amazing, amazing food and you get some pretty dodgy barbecue stuff as well.
Yes, yes.
You've got people on little scooters.
Yeah.
They rent these scooters out so you can go from one hotel to the next conference center to the next expo to whatever it is. They've got people riding around peddling those things that you sit in as a passenger.
Rixie taxis or something.
But it's got a Game of Thrones throne for you to sit in. They've got stormtroopers in full uniform walking around.
So it's all about experience.
It's totally immersive. And that's also why you won't, if you go online, you mentioned this to me earlier, you won't find any summary of South by Southwest.
Yeah.
You're going through my Instagram.
Yeah. So you wrote a really cool blog a while back about it. I think
Thanks.
You were at day three.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because not everybody gets to go to this.
No.
And I think that's one of the privileged things of being in the space.
Well, also the people who go want to go again. And
like
you've been to a couple of these all over the world, right? I've spoken to people who've been to a number of them, like Toby Shapshak, who goes to everything.
Yes.
And Toby says South by Southwest is the one place he doesn't miss out on every year. And he's been asked to speak 5 years.
Wow.
And he's been six.
Wow.
So he really does know what he's talking about.
And now you were a speaker. I mean, you had the speaker thing. And what was the topic?
We were talking about mobile technology in Africa, the opportunities that creates. What Africa is doing that is in some ways far more innovative and future forward
for sure
than what's happening in America. You know, Americans use phones because they're not at their laptop or they're not at their desk. It's a landline culture. It's bizarre. They bank by going to the bank.
Yeah, I know.
Americans don't have apps for their
banks.
But
South Africans don't even realize that. We've lived with it. We don't even realize that security, online security for purchases and transactions was actually developed here.
Well,
and that we started doing mobile banking before first world countries.
Exactly. And those kinds of things are things we should be very proud of. And again, we should be trumpeting those at a national level.
For sure.
It shouldn't be down to Gareth Cliff or, you know, the few South Africans who pitch up at South by Southwest to be telling our stories, because Africa represents, and this was the thrust of the argument that we made, Africa represents the largest, youngest, unsaturated market in the world for consumers.
Massive opportunity.
Right.
And but the thing is, the first world country, Africa, seems to be this enigma. Like, we know that the next billion connected and the next billion banked and the next billion whatever is in Africa. And so when someone from South Africa does go, I'm sure you were getting a lot of the questions, but like, oh, wow, you're doing it. How are you doing it? Why did you start doing it?
Well, this is it. And you mentioned it earlier, so you've already covered this ground in your mind, but it's because necessity breeds innovation.
Exactly.
So if you're delivering drugs in the Congo to an outlying village and you don't figure out a way to do it by drone, it'll take 8 hours and the people on the other side will be dead.
Yeah.
So you have to have a drone that can deliver chemicals to these people. You have to have, because you don't necessarily have electricity everywhere. So we develop batteries that no one else is developing.
Yeah.
The ability to pay people and make small micropayments by M-Pesa only happened in East Africa, because there was no other way to transfer
liquidity
crises, money.
Crises and all that stuff. There's all these solutions driven by obscure, bizarre problems and needs that the first world would never know about.
Well, I did an interview with a journalist when I got back who asked me, what did you bring back from South by Southwest?
Yeah.
And I said to him, well, I brought back some really Bernie sauce. Bernie sauce. But he said, no. And I knew he was being figurative, not literal. So what I brought back was, in one sentence, that if you want to make whatever your idea is successful, if you want to make a contribution, solve people's problems.
Exactly.
Full stop.
So that's design thinking. Now, we've been speaking a lot about design thinking, and it's not this thing that designers can go, oh, well, bro, I can think. It's actually this gap between technology and business and humans, critically humans, testing desirability, feasibility, and viability of a solution. It's not one maybe with another, or perhaps a little bit of this and some of the, it's equal parts, business, humans, and technology all coming together to solve problems. And that's where I think Africa has been doing that for decades. We know that there are this plethora of humans that all have a similar need, and the guy in the middle is going, well, shit, I can do that if I could just have that. So he goes to the guy that has that and says, well, I've got those people, you're that person.
Yeah.
Because it's not Ubuntu. I think people lose the idea of what Ubuntu really is. But it's this idea of collaboration really helps us move forward together. And we've been doing that just out of necessity, whereas the rest of the world have been doing it, they're almost forcing it upon themselves. The nice thing about South by Southwest and the discussions you're having and the things that you are bringing back from learning there is that these are the fruits now of design thinking.
And it's got to be collaborative.
You've
already hinted at that. Yeah. So in South Africa, we're very interested in who the big winner is, who the great idea came from, and how successful and rich that person is.
Mm.
And in America, you've got all these successful people looking to collaborate with other successful people to find the next big thing. They're not going to do it on their own. The one realization they absolutely have is that they're probably just lucky.
Yeah.
And it was a question of timing. In many of these situations, certainly when you look at like Zuckerberg with Facebook, just timing.
Yeah,
he was just the lucky guy there at the
right
time,
and people just adopted
had the required skill set to be able to put it together. But he's not a better kind of human than you.
Yeah, thank you.
Or anyone.
Yeah,
and all of us have got to realize that if we want to make a massive change, if we want to make a massive difference, we need to collaborate with other people
and solve problems.
You're never going to get it right on your own.
Solve problems that actually help people.
Thank you.
And that's really, really cool. I mean, we've covered a lot. I mean, South by Southwest must be an absolute whirlwind of a journey. I mean, it's 10 days. I think there's 24 tracks of possible things to do, from your music to the film to interactive.
And you do. You go to a bar.
And you see interesting people.
You meet fascinating people.
Yeah.
And just about everyone I met there was interesting in some way. You just have to ask the right questions. And you do have a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. It's not just geek stuff. And it's not just people trying to learn as much as possible. It's also people having the time of their lives. The food is extraordinary.
Yeah.
You drink a lot. And you go to these bars. There's one street that is just bars. Every door, left and right, is a bar. And some of them are really dodgy, and some of them are full of pool tables, and some of them have got girls dancing on the bar, and some of them have got people sitting at their laptops. And it's just crazy. It's a crazy
24/7 crazy.
Well, I think it's like that for a week of South by Southwest. Yeah. But I think the rest of the time Austin is quite an, and this is not a kind of alliteration or assonance, but it's an austere place.
Yes.
The rest of the time. Austin, I said in my article, is more San Francisco than San Antonio.
Yes.
So even though it's in Texas, people think, oh well, it's in the South, so it's got this kind of Cajun, Mexican, cowboy.
Yeah.
It really isn't like that at all.
Because people don't think that. People don't think new tech and greatest innovations.
Austin is the second biggest tech place to be in America. And in fact, a lot of the big Silicon Valley companies are establishing headquarters in Austin because there's space and it's not so expensive. It is impossibly expensive to live in San Francisco now.
I'm sure, yeah.
And if you work for Google or Facebook or Amazon, you can't. There's nowhere to do what you need to do that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. Even if you're earning the most money that that the tech businesses can pay you, it's hard as hell to live. Billionaires have very modest houses in San Francisco. Michael Dell lives in Austin.
Yeah,
and Dell's headquarters are in Austin, and he has the biggest house on the hill, and he microlights, and he can go down to the lake. And he can spend most of the year in sun, whereas in San Francisco, it's cold a lot of the time. And in Seattle, it's even worse, where Bill Gates lives. It's cold and it rains.
And it rains all the time.
Year round.
It's great Austin, for grunge rock, but not
Austin
really.
Has the climate of Johannesburg and Pretoria.
Awesome. Awesome more, Austin.
Awesome Austin. And their motto is keep Austin weird.
That's awesome. That really is awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, the civil rights original Austinians were probably right with, or the Texans were all right. The South will rise again, just in a very different way to what they had proposed. Now, Futurology Show, thanks for sticking around for the time you have today.
Sure.
And telling us about your trips. It's always great to travel, and I think it's really great to get a global perspective on these things. We sit here in South Africa, and sometimes we preach about like innovating within our bubble, or trying not to. But it's great to have these stories come back from abroad saying, well, hey, we've actually got some pretty cool thinking already, and back it up with what's happening overseas.
I want what we're doing here to stay ahead of everyone else. I mean, there are lots of people who are doing online broadcasting. There are lots of people doing podcasting. There are lots of people with great shows like yours all over the world. The thing that I think will keep us different is that we must be hungry to be at the front.
Exactly.
And the only way you get to the front is by
tenacity,
running with the grit, running with the big dogs.
Yeah,
and that doesn't happen in Johannesburg. Yeah. It happens in Johannesburg from a regional point of view, but if you stay in Johannesburg, you miss out on the next episode in evolution.
One last thing: while you were over in the States, is there this fear of digital connectedness trampling, disrupting broadcast and the nature of content development? I'm going to take a completely different stance. I mean, we've got VR content. We've got full immersive interaction spaces. That's not what traditional broadcast, like radio or television, would provide. And if that's where people are going, and that's what we've been enabled to consume more of, where is broadcast in the next 5 years?
Well, you see, it's actually quite simple because less is more.
Yeah.
The one thing you can do when you're doing everything else is listen. And that makes it extraordinarily powerful.
Yeah.
If you think about the world and the opportunities and the amount of noise and the amount of stuff you're blasted with, we're in an information overload in so many ways. But when you're cooking supper, when you're chopping up the vegetables, when you're running on the treadmill at
gym,
when you're waiting in the traffic, the one thing you can do that won't distract you and kill you is listen.
Yes.
If you're busy reading an article on your phone in traffic, you're going to have an accident and die. If you're doing that while you're chopping tomatoes with a knife, you will cut your finger off. If you're doing that while you're on the gym treadmill, you will fall and embarrass yourself in front of everybody. But you can always listen.
Yes.
And don't underestimate the power of this one sense, because it is the sense by which we have always gleaned the most information about our environment.
Absolutely.
It is the way that we have told the stories of humanity orally for far longer than we've ever written.
Yep. And I think that is so powerful as well. I mean, Cliff Central's turning 3 soon.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday. 3 years old. It's walking and talking to some extent if it was a toddler. But it's really great to see this bold step in broadcast, especially here, saying, well, screw you in traditional broadcast. Let's do something different. let's actually show you. Because there's so many guys talking the talk. To actually go and do something is where the big innovation starts to happen.
And the best thing we do, I love trumpeting our story.
Yeah, well, let's do it for a while.
It's great. You may have ended up with a radio show one day. Who knows? I mean, you know, radio's in your blood as well. But you're in a tech business, effectively. Yeah. And there are stories around that, and there are experiences around that that only someone like you could ever tell.
Yeah.
And for every 100 or 1,000 people who listen to this podcast every week, they get to connect with an authentic guy who's doing that stuff in everyday life.
Yeah.
And they're not being preached to by some person who's trying to market themselves to the masses.
Yeah.
You don't get that authenticity anywhere.
And that's sort of the trick to diversity. So the human population is so diverse. Everybody has a different need, but authentic stories, authentic content, authentic solutions will always have an audience. And I think that's the key. You're nodding your head, but do you agree that authentic technologies are going to be the thing that happens? It's not just, oh, look, I can do a gimmick thing.
Authentic technologies, but authentic people
making those technologies.
Yeah, because authentic people are going to create authentic things.
Yeah.
And the technology is a thing. It's not.
Yes, it's not, enablement.
Yeah, don't start believing that robot is a creature of choice and decision and morals and ethics and ideas.
Yeah.
What it is it's a creation of a person with those things. And authenticity is one of those legs on this tripod, the most important of those legs on this tripod.
Yeah.
Because the person who's communicating the idea is always more important than the means of distribution of that idea.
Yeah.
And technology can help us, but that's absolutely something humans will never turn away from.
Yeah.
In fact, Casey Neistat, who I don't have
he's
a lot
awesome.
Of, well, he is.
I like him.
I just don't like. I mean, he's got a weird speech impediment, and he came up with that one really great video, and he did.
But he's authentic, though.
Yeah,
still.
He did. Well, this is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
He released a new video at South by Southwest for the first time, and it's gone. I don't know how many millions of hits it's had, but the fact is, this guy is himself.
Yes.
He jumps off of cliffs. He does crazy things. He's
married to a South African swimwear model. Not that has anything to do with it, but he tells you about it. He's like, hey.
That's his thing.
Yeah.
And he's Casey. No one else could be him. He gave a great presentation about being authentic.
Yeah. I think what authenticity does is gives a certain amount of endurance to the journey of innovation.
Hmm.
I think a lot of people are going and saying, well, hey, that guy's done it. I'm going to try to do it. So they try really, really hard to be something they're not.
You just tire yourself out. You'll only ever be the second best someone else. You'll only ever be the best you.
Oh, fantastic. Hashtag. That's the lessons learned here on Futurology Show. We'll do the hashtag what Gareth said, but I think it would be a long list sometimes. The future, just quickly in the wrap-up. I think you've got to go and the future's going to continue. We're going to chat about some stuff when you're gone. We'll go through a list of some amazing stuff that's really come out post South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. But the future, are we looking at the silver lining, or is there still that big gray dull cloud in the middle of it all?
This is the greatest time to be alive. Stop it. I can't even believe there are still people who think this. I know you don't.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to be devil's
frame
advocate.
It. Yeah.
The world is better than it's ever been for humans, and it will only improve.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're all going to end up not doing work because we need to earn money, because money won't be an issue anymore for all of us.
Universal basic income.
Right, it'll happen at some point, and it might not happen in your or my lifetime, but there are our kids and grandkids who will live a totally different life to us. They'll look back and think that what we're going through now is working in workhouses in the Industrial Revolution.
Exactly.
You will not work for money. You will work for personal satisfaction, and you will work so that you have a place and a way to share your ideas.
Yeah.
You will be a living, breathing, conscious organism rather than just one that does.
Yeah. And that's the nature of progress as well. The things that got us here today won't necessarily be the things that take us into tomorrow. So the fact that things like South by Southwest are there, the fact that you can go over there and actually partake in those events, fantastic. I mean, that's just human collaboration happening already.
And it's our job to share those stories.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your time, Gareth.
Thank you.
It's awesome having you in studio, even though it is opposite day and you're sitting on the other side of the driving desk.
Cool. Good to see you.
See you soon. Cheers, cheers. Cool, guys. So you have been listening to the Futurology Show. We have been wrapping up with Gareth on all about South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. If you don't know what's going on, there are some great blogs. We'll be tweeting them all out soon. And we'll be moving through a lot of the topics that comes out in South by Southwest throughout the Futurology show. Just stick around between Brett Sinclair, the digital renegade, and Michael Cowan, the social impact solutionist. We'll be talking about all the things from VR, AR, what's happening in medical spaces, big data. And if you've missed any of those shows that we have done, you can follow all of the podcasts right here on Cliff Central. Free to view, free to listen. Go for it. And if you have any topics of conversation that you'd like us to focus on, feel free to tweet us at Futurology Show. You can send tweets to myself at Big Brave Brett, or at Michael Cowan, or at Brett _Sinclair. The three stooges, if you will, of the future are talking some amazing stuff as we go through the Futurology Show. So it's been great having you. We're going to cut off today and move into a song soon. And we hope to have you back on the Futurology Show, where we're talking more about what happened in the past, what's happening today, and where we're all going in the future. Cheers, cheers. CliffCentral.com.